To the Daft on Draft podcast. I'm your host, Corey Kinnon, Fake Corey Kinnon on Twitter. Again, if you are tuning in for the third episode since relaunching this podcast, please go over to Spotify, Apple, whatever medium you're listening on. Like, subscribe, leave a review, do your thing. I really do appreciate it. I'm doing my best to bring some forward-thinking and unique content to the draft space. And I just really, again, the end goal of this podcast is to just help the listeners, whoever is out there, whether they're just interested in the draft and they have no interest in creating, or they're interested in the draft and they have some interest in creating but haven't taken that next step yet, to let everybody know that this draft work is really accessible, and it can be for anybody who wants to put in the work to get to a place where you can understand scheme and all of these different other sorts of things that it takes. But it is accessible, and that's my hope and my dream of creating this podcast. But in this episode in particular, we're moving right along in our scouting series. So again, last episode, we talked to Derek Klassen about what to look for when scouting quarterbacks. Again, really productive conversation, really awesome conversation with Derek. Today, we're turning towards running backs. And to talk about running backs, I'm thrilled to have on ESPN's Jordan Reed. To talk with me about running backs, what he looks for in running backs, nitty-gritty traits, things like that, to just really break down the position of what to look for when watching a running back. So just a really cool story about Jordan and just the kind of person that Jordan is, right? Well, first, this happened while he was recording this session. And again, he's a busy dude, SportsCenter, ESPN, doing his radio hits, doing what he does. We got 10 minutes in and I realized I didn't hit record on the session. And he was more than willing to give me an extra 10 minutes of his time to go back and start the whole damn thing over and do it again. But another good story about it is when I first started in the industry, I was 2018, I'd graduated from grad school. And again, I told my story the first episode of, I spent my entire last semester of grad school reading draft content, making mock drafts in Excel in class. Like, that's all I did in class. I didn't pay attention. I think I got a C minus in my last grad school class because I didn't care. I wanted to be done with school. But he was one of the people. He had just started with TDN at that time, the draft network at that time. And I shot him a DM like, hey man, I've got some questions. I think this is something I'm interested in doing. Some questions though, if you have the time to answer. And he said, yeah, man, here's my email address. Shoot me your questions. And I gave him a list of probably 10 questions. And he emailed me back. He gave me a response back, of every single question, that I had. And that means something to me, man. That has stuck with me. And, you know, I went to the Senior Bowl in 2020, still really young into doing draft content, right? Back then in Mobile, they had in the hotel that was kind of the hub for the event, they had a film room that was literally lined in an L shape with projectors. And each projector had the practice film on it from the session, the sessions that had just happened that day. And Jordan was sitting at one of these projectors. It was like, hey man, do you care if I sit here? I don't even think he could put it together. I was the guy who sent me an email. You know, he's like, yeah, man, sit by. And I was, you know, just watching with him. And there was a moment where I had like, he was just watching, I believe it was Lloyd Cushenberry coming out of LSU. He was at the Senior Bowl that year. And Lloyd would snap the ball and come off the ball, and he'd rewind it. And Lloyd would snap the ball and come off the ball, and then Jordan would rewind it. And it got to the point where it was like, hey man, I asked him, I was like, what are you watching for right here? Like, I was curious, like, what are you watching for right here? And he's like, oh, I'm watching where his eyes are going. So here's the run concept that they're running based on this. This is where his eyes should be going. So I'm watching to make sure his eyes are in the right place off the ball as soon as he's getting off the ball. And I think that's just a testament of who Jordan is, a testament of why Jordan is where he is, right? Going from the Draft Network to ESPN. He's a grinder, he's a hard worker, but I think most importantly, he's a great person. And he's been willing to give me more time than a man, some other people in his position would, you know? So, that's another reason why Jordan's always near the top of my list of people when I do have an opening like this or something like this that I want to do where I'm looking for guests. Like, Yeah, I want Jordan Reed on my podcast. So again, Jordan here is going to join to talk about running backs, and I really hope you enjoy this conversation. But again, after the end of that episode, I'm not coming back on. We're not going to do a little roundup. So this is just another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast, part two of this scouting series of what to watch for when watching expositions. And here's Jordan Reed to talk about running backs. All right, continuing on our Daft on Draft scouting series, what to watch for when watching position X. You know, we talked about quarterbacks with Derek Klassen last time. And now I'm pleased to bring in ESPN's Jordan Reed to talk about running backs. Jordan has been on the Daft on Draft podcast before, back when I was with Devin, before, you know, I had my second kid and it kind of put everything on hold. But Jordan, welcome back to the pod.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me back, Corey. It's always a pleasure being here.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, talking about running backs, I know you're a college quarterback, but that means you've got a really good grip on the entire playbook and the entire offensive side of the ball. You know, we've seen a lot of really explosive running backs come out in the past year. We've seen a lot of really exciting tape. Even this past year, I really liked, like, Jalen Wright was electric and some guys like that. But and like Trey Benson, really good eyes, really like the way he runs the football. But when we're always talking about running backs, and we're always talking about their tape, always talking about their projection in the NFL draft, it always seems like the starting point in the conversation always comes back to, but they're a running back. You know, the lack of first round running backs, the lack of bell cows has created this conversation about their positional value. So when you're looking at running backs, when you're aligning running backs on your big board and doing mock drafts, kind of what kind of angle do you take on the positional value conversation?
It really just depends on the general manager. Honestly, there's a case-by-case basis with running backs, and there's going to be some GMs that value them highly, while there are others that value them more so on day two or day three. And I think we've had great examples of that in the past few drafts. Last year, we saw Jahmyr Gibbs as well as Bijan Robinson both go inside the top 12. And we know with Atlanta and Terry Fontenot, he doesn't really care what other people's boards look like from a media standpoint, even around the league. They have players that they like, and they get fixated on those players no matter what the position is. We saw it this year with them taking the quarterback with Penix at 8, which I thought was the shock of the draft. And then last year, taking Bijan Robinson inside of the top 10. So it really is a case-by-case basis with these general managers. But me personally, I don't value the position as highly just because we've seen it be a plug-and-play position, whether it's day two or day three. Breece Hall, him being an early second-round selection, and then Isaiah Pacheco being a seventh-round pick with the Kansas City Chiefs. We saw both of those guys go on to have a lot of success with their teams. So, and I think there's other positions that you should value more highly. And I honestly think there's 6 premium positions in football now as opposed to 4. I would say 5 years ago it was 4. Your typical ones, quarterback, offensive tackle, defensive end, and then corner. I think those were your 4 premium positions up until about 4 or 5 years ago. But now I would add wide receiver and interior defensive line into those 6 premium positions. And you always look at the priority as far as what the NFL is paying. We've seen the run on defensive tackles. We've seen those guys get paid, and most of those guys have been first-round picks. And then wide receivers, we've seen those guys get in excess of 25 or even 30 million a year now. So wide receiver and interior defensive line, I think, are some other positions that I think GMs should prioritize over running back. But me personally, I think it's more so of a day two or day three position.
Makes a ton of sense, especially when you look at, again, kind of the death of the bell cow back, you know, the days of an Adrian Peterson. I mean, there are some exceptions. Yeah, Nick Chubb had 300 carries in 2022. Derrick Henry has gone over 300 carries multiple times in his career. But if we go back to 2012, which I feel like is the last time we really saw running backs go high. Yeah, Saquon Barkley went in 2018, but that was an outlier historically, even surrounding the years prior and the years after. But 2012, I would say the Trent Richardson draft goes 3rd overall. In 2012, there were 10 backs with over 275 carries, and in 2023, there was 1. So that teams are definitely going more toward running back by committee. Again, there are some exceptions. You know, you put Christian McCaffrey on the field because you have a Christian McCaffrey. You put Derrick Henry on the field because you have Derrick Henry. Nick Chubb would have been in that category had he not blown his knee out week 2. But going more towards that committee approach, that affects the way we look at running backs coming into the NFL as well. So how does that impact your your process when you're scouting?
Well, it does. I think long gone are the days of that, what I call 1A bell cow type of guy, just because it's a 17-game season, man. It's a long season. You don't want that one guy taking those 20, 25, or even 30 carries a game just because they're not going to last. And then you have to factor in the playoffs as well. You're playing in excess of, what, two or three extra games if you go all the way. So that's just way too many carries for running one running back to take. So now the committee approach is something that we've seen become really popular now just because you're getting more value and it's just better from a team building standpoint. You don't want to pay one running back 15 to 20 plus million dollars a year when, you know, I can draft two or three guys and pay them what, $7 to $8 million total for all those guys. It just makes more sense from a team building standpoint. So I think that's why we've seen the evolution of the running back position evolve so much over the past four or five seasons, I would say, as opposed to just that bell cow guy. And then just the increase of the passing game now. The passing game is so crucial now just because the league, I think, is you're probably, what, having a 65-35 split as far as your pass-to-run ratio for some teams now. I think it's even that high for a lot of teams now just because you have to be able to throw the football now just because long gone are the days of what I like to call just suffocating or bleeding the clock to where you're just giving a guy 30, 35 plus times a game just because offenses are way too explosive now to where they can collect points in bunches now, as opposed to you having 9 to 10 minute drives and you're giving this running back all these carries. Teams want to be explosive now just because the worst position that you can be in is you get down 14 to 20 points a game in a game and you only have a run first offense. You're just not going to be explosive enough to sustain or come back in games. So teams want to be able to be explosive offensively. And that's just the way the NFL is trending now. Quarterbacks are becoming better. We've seen an influx of wide receivers. And that's a credit to 7-on-7 being such a crucial part to guys' youth, whether it's in middle school, high school, and even college now. So it's a passing league now for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because one thing I do want to talk about is running backs in the passing game. So, you know, breaking that down into three categories, honestly, one, being able to catch the football is huge. Not every running back has that ability. Two, the ability to have that mismatch ability, that flexibility, whether that is, you know, flexing a running back into the slot, motioning them out wide and seeing if if they're playing man or a linebacker follows him, or if they're in zone, you know, can you create some separation even against a corner and zone out there? But three, like, pass pro is very important. And if your job is to be on the field on third down, you're not running a route every time you're on the field on those third downs as well. So the ability to participate in pass pro as well. So kind of how do you view, again, we don't need to go into being able to catch the football. Yes. If you're going to be on the field, you got to catch the football. But in a running back's ability to align in a variety of ways, or even if they aren't aligned in a variety of ways, create mismatches. And what do you look for again, when a running back is staying in pass pro?
Well, it's just a personnel game, honestly, when you're talking about creating mismatches. And the film that I love to go back to every week when I'm watching this NFL film throughout the week, or throughout the year, I should say, Mike McDaniel and Kyle Shanahan, they're two of my favorites just because they're so good with toying with defensive personnel. And basically how it works is, coming out of the huddle, you have your assistants in the box and on the sideline. They're calling out the personnel. You see them holding up the big card sometimes in college with the number of personnels on it. And something that I love that McDaniels does is that he'll come out and 00 personnel. So no running backs, no tight ends, but five receivers. And one of those receivers could be Devon Achane. And he'll start off with Devon Achane split out wide, and then he'll motion them to the backfield. So defenses have six DBs on the field, but I bring Devon Achane back into the backfield. Now I have four guys on the perimeter and I have my one running back in the backfield. There's so many possibilities that you can do with that. And then I can run the ball now in between the tackles and I have six DBs on the field. We both know a lot of times in the NFL, a lot of DBs, especially those nickel guys, they don't like to tackle. So now I have an advantageous matchup created. So that's just a prime example of some of those mismatches that you can create with those running backs that not only can play from the backfield, but also can split out wide as well. And we see it a lot with Christian McCaffrey too. But that's just one thing that I really look for. And then the committee part, I mean, it's something that the NFL is really trending towards as well.
Right. Right. So again, going back to pass pro as well, it's just hard to see the field if you're a liability. Like,
yeah,
if opposing defensive coordinators see you on the field, they're going to bring pressure. And if opposing defensives bring pressure, the quarterback is going to have to change his protection if he reads pressure. So like, what are you looking for then, like, in terms of running back? Because I know you want to get a weapon on the field, but like, at the end of the day, if your quarterback has to change his protection, like, you got to do your job. So, and an offensive coordinator is not going to put you on the field if you can't do that job.
Well, you just have to be willing. I think that's the one trait that you have to look for in running backs. Is he physical? Does he stand in there, run his feet on contact, or is he completely moving out the way, or is he just trying to cut block everybody? That's something that you see a lot in college, of where these guys will really just throw their helmet at guys' knees and just try to cut block them every single time. And I think that's something that's really hard to gauge with college running backs, just because these coaches are not spending a lot of time on pass protection. And even though it's super crucial for them in the NFL, they're not really taught the details and the nuances of pass protection until they get to the league, just because they're so involved in the passing game. They're not really taught those details of how to actually run their feet on contact. Where do I place my hands when somebody's running full speed at me? But the one thing you can look for is, are they physical enough and do they have enough courage to stand in there and run their feet on contact? Just because if they have that baseline trait, then I can coach up everything around that part of it once they get to the NFL. So number one, just look to see if they're willing. And then also, do they understand where they fit in their pass protection assignments as well? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Joshua Williams from LSU. He's a dude that I've loved watching in pass pro. Charting Jaden Daniels, watching those receivers. It's impossible to miss what Josh Williams does in pass pro at LSU. He's a lot of fun to watch. I like shifting this conversation towards running back by committee, because again, that's the way the NFL is going. The Baltimore Ravens have been excellent at it over the years. The New England Patriots, in their Tom Brady era, have been excellent at building almost the perfect puzzle of a running back room. But again, that takes all the parts. Sometimes we see these running backs like Antonio Gibson, Demetric Felton had a really dynamic Senior Bowl as a wide receiver. He was cutting everybody up in one-on-ones. And so people are like, this guy's a weapon. We got to get him in. But we've seen kind of those types of running backs who we think, oh, they might be Christian McCaffrey. It's just never a safe bet to ever say somebody could be Christian McCaffrey. But they can't really find a role because they don't have one true running back trait. So when you're building like a running back by committee, kind of how would you do it?
It's kind of like building a wide receiver core, right? You always have your different types, guys that can satisfy different roles. You have your big boundary side X receiver. You have your Z outside that can really create space in the field. And then you have your slot guy that really can manipulate and win over the middle of the field. And I think running backs are very similar. You still need that big bell cow type of guy, just because – you want to have somebody that can run in between the tackles and that can take that pounding, but you want to have that change-up type of player too. That's really your shorter, your shifty type of guy that you can create those advantageous mismatches. And then that third guy, it really just depends on what you want. You can have a best of both worlds. You can have a certain type, or you can have another banger in between the tackles. And I think this is something that the Dallas Cowboys found out last year, just because they, when they went away from Ezekiel Elliott and thought Tony Pollard could be that 1A type of player, he turned out to not be what they thought he could be as far as being that high-end starter. And I thought he was always at his best when he had 12 to 15 carries a game, but you really mix those up, whether it was, screen passes out of the backfield, or I should say 12 to 15 touches a game, whether it was screen passes out of the backfield, jet sweeps, using them in different ways out of the slot, and then also giving them carries out of the backfield. I thought they miscalculated exactly what he could be as far as a player that he could get 25 to 30 touches a game, just because he just wasn't going to last, just because he's not a super big guy. So that's just one example. And then there's plenty of others around the league as well. But I think you definitely have to have different types. And then, like building a wide receiver core, there's different areas of expertise that each one has to have as well. You don't want a culmination of a bunch of similar types. You don't want a bunch of smaller guys that satisfy a whole bunch of similar roles.
Yeah. I love those like the Tom Brady Patriots teams. I think they exemplify kind of an ideal running back room. Like, you have LeGarrette Blount, who will run through your face. You have James White, who will make you look foolish in the open field with football in his hands. He'll catch it consistently. You can do a lot of things with him in the passing game. And you have Rex Burkhead, who's like almost like the mixture of both. Like he's a he'll do the dirty work in pass pro. He can run between the tackles. He's also no slouch as a receiver as well. I think that's a really good way to build a running back room. Diving in now to like individual traits of what it takes to be a running back. So again, what to watch for when we're talking about running backs. Let's start with vision. You know, so again, there are different schemes that require running backs to hit different landmarks and to look for different keys. And so what do you look for in particular when you're talking about this running back is a really patient runner. This running back allows his blocks to develop, and this guy knows what he's looking for when he's got the ball on his hands.
This goes back to the non-negotiables I was talking about a little bit earlier, Corey, of where this is completely up to you, and based on each position, you have to really nail down three or four traits that you look for in positions. And for me, visions is at the top for running backs. It is the one area where you cannot teach a running back. This is a God-given trait. It's something that you are naturally born with. And with you being a Browns fan, with Trent Richardson, you know all about this, about vision. It's something that you have to have. And as a coach, I actually used to coach running backs, and just seeing the different variances of vision and how you can lead a running back to a certain area, or you can show him what to look at, but you can't create those instant reactions of what happened once you lead him into those areas. So for instance, what I used to always tell my guys in inside zone is that you have to see the front, whether it's three down or four down. But whenever we have front side inside zone, we always want to look at who is the first play side defensive lineman, because we're going to get a double team there. So either I'm looking A to B gap, or I could potentially look to hit it backside A gap as well. So I can lead you to those areas. But once that moment happens, it's completely up to you as far as that vision that you have. You have to have that that instant short area burst, or that instant decision making to really determine what you're going to do next. So vision not only is first level, it's second and third level as well. So once you get through that first A gap, what happens after that? You have to be able to read, those play side linebackers as far as what they're doing, how they're flowing over the top, who's climbing up to those linebackers. And I have to be able to read the back of my offensive lineman as well. Is he blocking them backside, or is he blocking them plate side? I have to be able to cut off of that. And then when you get to the third level, you have what I like to call green grass rule. Sometimes you have a lot of running backs that have a lot of high school in them, and they try to race to the sideline as fast as they can just because they feel as if they can outrun everybody. But other times you have a lot of running backs that stick to those green grass principles and they run to the open field. But I think what separates those good to those great running backs with vision is those guys that can create on the third level. Can they make that safety that's coming downhill? Can he make him miss in open space? So that's a little bit off of vision. That's more so short area quickness and then making guys miss on the third level. But with vision, it's just one of those traits that is naturally given to those running backs. And you can tell guys that do not have vision just because they'll make a lot of bad decisions and they'll run into some bad tackles as well.
Yeah, you mentioned me being a Browns fan and covering the Browns and the Trent Richardson thing, but I even think last year with Nick Chubb going down in week two is also a pretty stellar example of running back vision and how you lose one who maybe has the best eyes in the NFL. And like I think Jerome Ford is a fine running back. I think Kareem Hunt lost his juice, but I think he's a good gap power running back. But nobody's Nick Chubb in terms of how light he is on his feet, his ability to sniff out a backside cut that looks like it hasn't even developed yet. And so when you lose a guy like that, then you see like, oh, that's what good vision is. And that really puts really things into perspective. His ability in outside zone to see those backside cuts and just cut off that seal block and oh, missed it. But you then moved on to making those third level defenders miss. And I think that's a good segue into elusiveness, change of direction, short area quickness, footwork. Talk a little bit about that as well. I know contact balance is important. Do you think it doesn't matter how you make a defender, how you create a missed tackle, if you run through a guy or if you make a miss with short area quickness, or if you think, no, there's a big difference in how you make a guy miss as well?
Yeah, this is another non-negotiable for me just because everything's not going to be blocked up perfectly in the NFL. And you have to be able to make guys miss. And Kareem Hunt was a great example of this coming out of Toledo. And I'm not sure if you were a scouting guys back then, but with Kareem Hunt, his A-plus trait was his contact balance. And everybody wondered, like, is this going to translate to the NFL? I was like, yeah, if you can make guys miss and you can fend guys off, that's something that's going to translate to the next level. So Kareem Hunt was one guy that really taught me that and why I included it now, of why I value it so highly with running backs. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, one guy I really learned a lot from, and I'm not sure if you remember this guy, his name was Puka Williams when he was coming out of Kansas. And if you remember Puka could not, when things were not blocked up cleanly on the first level, he could not make guys miss. But if things were blocked up cleanly, he looked amazing on the second and third level with making guys miss. So you have to be able to make those guys miss on the first level, just because there's going to be some guys that, you know, make a quick swim move on your center and he completely whiffs. And if you're not able to make that nose tackle or that one technique miss in those short area spaces, then you're probably not going to be very good on the next level, just because you're not going to have what I like to call clean air yards, just because with those clean air yards, you see those areas that are blocked really cleanly, or you have clean segues to the second or the third level. It's not always going to be like that in between the tackles in the NFL. So you have to have that short area quickness on the first level as well as the second and third level. Now you're talking about guys that can be really special on the next level.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that as well. And the way that you mentioned contact balance, I tend to trend more towards guys with really electric feet, really great change of direction, and can make guys miss in a phone booth, because I think Kareem Hunt is a good example of, yeah, that'll translate. I'm thinking of like more of like an Audric Estime or Notre Dame. Like, that's his calling. He was explosive as well. Like, he could hurdle dudes, but for the most part, he's pretty stiff runner. And like, is he going to be able to work through defenders the way he did at Notre Dame? Or like, would he have benefited more from having some change of direction, or like having the ability to make a guy miss in a phone booth rather than just having to put his shoulder down? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I wasn't a huge fan of Estime, honestly, for that reason, just because yes, the contact balance and the broken tackle stuff is good, but when you're talking about NFL guys, they're going to be bigger, faster, and stronger. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a lot of guys that can create those solo tackles, and you're not going to be able to bounce off of everybody and be what I like to call a bumper car. That's just not sustainable in the NFL. That's why I liked more so guys like Trey Benson. Trey Benson was my top ranked running back in this draft, just because he not only has the contact balance like an Audric Estime of where he can be a bumper car, but he can break you down and make you miss in a phone booth as well. He has that ability to stay on track even when those cloudy looks present itself to him. So you can't just be a bumper car all the time, just because it's not going to be sustainable. You have to be able to make those guys miss in tight areas, but also when you get in the open field as well.
Yeah. Speaking of the open field, last trait aspect of a running back I want to hit on is explosiveness. So when we're talking about running backs, explosiveness is, I feel like, parsed out into two different things, right? So there's, you see the hole and you hit the hole, the initial burst. But then once you do the green grass rule, once you do hit green grass, you have that extra gear. So what kind of signs or evidence on tape do you see to know, like, that guy's got a really good burst, or that guy's got, I mean, burners are pretty easy to see on tape, but So what are you looking for there?
I mean, just look at Jahmyr Gibbs. He had the ability to detach from would-be tacklers, is what I like to call it. You see a lot of guys get in the open field and they have these long runs, but they don't have that second nitro or turbo button in order to detach from players in the open field. And yeah, long runs are nice. I love explosive plays, but it's just different when you can get guys that can finish with 6 points in the end zone, just because it's something that just, it's a death blow to defenses, man. It not only wears down on them, but it's just nothing that they can do in the open field. And wow, those 30 or 40 big runs are nice. 30-40 yard runs are nice. If you have that guy that can turn them to 60-70 yard gains in an instant, it's just a game changer. And I think Jahmyr Gibbs is a great example of that. And that's why the Lions really value him a lot. And, you know, I think that's going to be a big difference in this running back class that we have coming up as well. And I've watched a couple guys already. I've seen one that has that instant turbo button, but also has that ability to detach in the open field. And that one guy is Jaden Ott from California. I'm not sure if you watched him. He has that instant turbo button, as opposed to some other guys like a Quinshon Judkins, who I think has that He has that initial turbo button, but he doesn't have that second turbo button when he is out in the open field. And Ollie Gordon is the same way. And Amarion Hampton from North Carolina, he's more so like an Audric Estime. I think he's faster. He's going to be faster than Estime, but he's more so of that bumper car type of runner. So I'm getting a little bit off schedule here just because I'm getting excited about the 2025 running back class, but just trying to give some examples of some guys that we could see next year and what the differentiator could be as far as that second turbo button.
Yeah, I wanted to now use two 2024 running backs and kind of juxtapose them to you. And maybe this is a good example for people who are listening as well. So let's talk about Blake Corum from Michigan, and let's talk about Jalen Wright from Tennessee. So both good running backs in their own regard. Jalen Wright has that second turbo button. Blake Corum has that first turbo button. Blake Corum's, I think, play speed is better than his testing numbers. Like, I think he's got the vision that we kind of talk about. Jalen Wright really never ran through a loaded box at Tennessee. So, like, how do you evaluate those two running backs on the same kind of plane, knowing that their play style is very different and that they play the game different? Like, I tend to think, like, Blake Corum has the making of a guy who's going to average 4 yards in the NFL, like, because he has the initial burst and he can see a hole develop and he's got fast eyes. I think Jalen Wright can be a home run hitter. I'm not sure if he's got what it takes to get through the initial swim move to get to green grass. So how do you juxtapose those two guys if we're talking about two different
runs? Yeah, this goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier of why it's so hard to rank these running backs from a media perspective. Just because if I'm an inside or outside zone scheme, I'm probably not going to value Blake Corum very highly just because that's not his area of expertise and that's not where he specializes in. But for a team like Miami or the 49ers that really like getting their running backs on the outside shoulder of the tackle, they're going to love Isaac Garendo or Jalen Wright or somebody like that just because they have the speed not only to get to the perimeter, but they can circle the defense and make things happen. So it really just depends on the scheme that you run. And then also, what do you value when you're evaluating these running backs? If you value contact balance and then those guys that can run in between the tackles more consistently, you're going to like Corum more than you like a guy like Jalen Wright. But if you want that home run hitter that can change the game and be what I like to call a sudden change player, you're going to value Jalen Wright a little bit more. So it really just depends on the flavor that you like. And then the hard part, honestly, about all of this, Corey, is that it just boils down to scheme. Mm-hmm. Just because everybody that runs certain type of schemes, they're not going to value those players in certain circumstances. That was a tongue twister I tried to get out there. But it not only is running back, but it's offensive lineman. Just because you have zone scheme offensive lineman, you have man gap power offensive lineman. It's corners. You like man corners as opposed to zone scheme corners. So it's not just running backs. You're doing this for every single position that you have certain schemes for.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does kind of seem like, wrapping up with scheme fit, that, yeah, that is the case with every single position. Does it seem to you like running back success is hinged more on scheme fit more than any other position?
Yeah, I would say so. And then also the play caller as well. You have to be able to put these guys in advantageous situations. Just because if you keep running Blake Corum on outside zone or, you know, runs that really specialize in attacking outside of the tackle, you're not going to get the most bang for your buck with Corum. He's one of those guys that's an in-between the tackles type of player, and he is at his best when he has to make sudden decisions in short areas. That's really where he specializes in. So it really boils down to just the play caller, putting those guys in advantageous situations. And I think a great example of that from last year is Devon Achane in that Miami Mike McDaniel scheme. You saw him getting out on the perimeter, whether it was as a runner or even as a pass catcher. You want him in space just because he's at his best. He's most comfortable when he has a lot of room to operate. But if you run him in between the tackles, you put two or three tight ends on the field and you're running man gap power schemes, that's just not really where he excels at. But when you give him space, you give him those quick tosses, those sweeps, those reverses, that's really where he excels in.
Yeah, I think that's a really great example. And I think a great example on the opposite end of the spectrum is probably Javonte Williams from the 2021 class, right? You know, second running back off the board out of North Carolina, just a dynamic, dominant gap power runner gets drafted into the Broncos, who have run nothing but inside outside zone. And we haven't seen the success that we would have thought we would have seen from a guy like Javonte Williams. And so when we're talking about scheme fit, not only for running backs, but for every position, it's something to be aware of. Like, where did this guy land? Who is the play caller? How does this player fit into that particular scheme? But Jordan, I think we dominated the topic of what to watch for when watching running backs. Again, I do appreciate your time. Jordan Reed from ESPN. Is there anywhere else people can find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it nowadays, at Jordan_Reed. That's JORDAN_REID. You can find my work alongside my colleagues, Phil Yates, Matt Miller, as well as Mel Kiper Jr. on ESPN+. Things have calmed down for us, obviously, with the draft being over now. But once we get into July and early August, we'll have plenty of stuff on the 2025 draft. I did just release my way too early 2025 mock draft, and that's just the introduction of a lot of names that we're going to be hearing about throughout the summer and into the earlier parts of the fall as well.
Awesome. All right, Jordan, again, thanks again for coming on the Dapped on Draft podcast for a second time. You are more than welcome to come back whenever you want.
Thanks as always, Corey.